Okay, we're testing this.
All right. Marcy Schwartz and Shirley Stolzer interviewing Judge Lawrence Kaplan in his home on
Lyndhurst Green.
This is our second interview with Judge Kaplan. Judge Kaplan, can you say a few words?
I'd be happy to say a few words so that you can tell it's really me talking. Okay.
Okay. Judge Kaplan, where we left off last time was when you entered the service.
Right.
And you had gone down to Maryland. And if you could just, this is wonderful, if you can just continue and tell us about your experiences there.
Well,
how long you were down there.
Okay, this was at a reception center at Fort Meade, Maryland, which is sort of halfway between Baltimore and Washington, D.C. And the real significance of that, and I don't know if I'd mentioned this earlier when we talked about it or not, because it seems like I've told this story to someone recently, and maybe whether it was you or someone else, I don't know. But at that time, having just been drafted, actually, I had sort of planned in advance for the possibility of getting a commission in the Judge Advocate General's Office of the Army. And so I had prepared all my papers and so forth that would make that possible. The only problem was that I had not been admitted to the bar as yet on a formal basis. I had passed my District of Columbia bar exam at that point. So the plan was to try to get into the District of Columbia and get sworn in so that I could qualify. And didn't I tell this story to you people before? I never did? Okay.
Excuse me, I'm
right.
Trying to find another pen, but this one doesn't
work. Okay. So I, my wife had a aunt, her mother's sister, who was married to a career military officer. Actually, he was primarily an enlisted man, but during the war, World War II, he was elevated, made a captain, and eventually retired as a lieutenant colonel. And he was living in Washington, D.C., retired, along with his wife, my wife's aunt, Ann Ahrens. And so the plan that we had was for me to somehow or another, even though I was had just gone in, to be able to go into into Washington, D.C. and get sworn in at the bar there, get my certification, and then go over to the Pentagon and file my papers so that I could eventually hopefully get accepted and transferred to the Judge Advocate General's office. So what happened was my former college roommate was from Baltimore, which is but for this particular time, I was at Fort Meade. My wife's Uncle Nate, was able to make some arrangements so that I could get a pass that weekend to go into Washington, D.C. And I met Natalie there, who took the bus down from Pittsburgh. That was the reliable way to get to Washington in those days. I'm not sure, but what is still more reliable than the planes. And we met, and she had my papers, and I was able to take them over to the Pentagon and get them filed the next day, and then so we had a chance to see her, although I'd only been in the Army for a few days at that point. And then I went back. I reported at the Pentagon dressed in my private's uniform in the middle of all those generals and high-ranking officers that were parading around there. So I felt pretty lowly. Mm-hmm. But it worked, and we got the papers filed, and I went back to my to the reception center at Fort Meade, from which I, in a couple days thereafter, got transferred to my basic training place, which was literally just up the road in Aberdeen, Maryland. So I didn't go very far at this point. And in fact, I used to joke thereafter about that when I was in the military service, I said I was overseas on the other side of the Potomac, because my ultimate duty station was at the Pentagon. But I went through basic training, and while I was there, as I said, my college roommate lived in Baltimore, and my wife got an opportunity to come down, and I got a pass after I was there for 4 or 5 weeks, so we got to spend some time together over what was an all-too-short weekend. At the end of that basic training period, which was like 8 weeks, got transferred then to a quartermaster training school down in Fort Lee, Virginia. And so that wasn't too far away either. That was just on the other side of Washington, D.C., Fort Lee being sort of outside of Fredericksburg, Virginia, below Richmond. And as luck would have it, we got a Christmas leave. We got to come home for, I think, 2 weeks, which was a pretty good break at that point. And while I was home, my commission in the Judge Avery General's office came through, and my orders were to go back to Fort Lee, get sworn in as a first lieutenant, and then from there I was then ordered, of all places, back to Aberdeen Proving Grounds, this time in the office of the staff Judge Advocate General there. So I went back to the place where I'd just come from, and at least a month or so before, and that's what I did. And I was there a month or so, and got orders to go to the Judge Advocate General School, which was in the at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. So there I am. I'm back in Virginia again. So I got there. I was able to find an apartment, and my wife joined me at that point. She had... This was in Charlottesville, Virginia. Mm-hmm. Natalie had been teaching school back here in Pittsburgh, and I think I probably told you about the reasons why we got married. Never talked about any of that?
Not yet.
Okay. Because at this point, we had been married, a little over a year. We got married in November in my senior year in law school. And I was a senior, she had been working. She'd come to she'd been a graduate of Penn State, and you think this is a good point to talk about how we met, and we'll get back to Charlottesville we'll get back in around 15 minutes to Charlottesville. But I was a junior or second year student actually in law school at the University of Pittsburgh, having come there. I'd applied really to several law schools, one at the University of Pennsylvania, where I had done my undergraduate work, and then at Pitt, and I really hadn't applied anywhere else. And I sort of was looking forward to sort of coming back to my home area, because that's where I expected to live and work and so forth. And I thought it would be to my advantage to go to law school and sort of see how the system worked. And I assumed that I would probably end up in Pittsburgh, but there was always the possibility that I might go back to Uniontown, or on the other hand, I might go to where my mother had grown up in Washington, Pennsylvania, since I had all these cousins there that I told you about the last time, and one of whom was a lawyer, and maybe work at that law firm. But that decision hadn't remained to be made, because I knew I was going to have to go into the service eventually.
Was everybody drafted?
Yeah, in those days, everyone was drafted. This was during the Korean War. And
what year were you drafted?
I was drafted, actually, if you recall, they wanted to take me while I was still in law school. And I got a deferment because I had a very sympathetic chairman of the draft board who who was a high school principal from near from one of the small towns outside of Uniontown. If you can have small towns outside of small towns. So people were being called up into the service. And, in fact, our class in law school was made up of people who were going to law school in the normal course of events, having just graduated from college, and returning veterans who were coming back from World War II at this point. You're right. I was there exactly the period of the Korean War, from 1950 to 1953.
So they were trying to draft you during the war, but you didn't go until after, so the war was really over.
The war was over, but there was all of this post-Korean stuff going on. You know, it was an occupied country at that point. There was a truce, of course, with North Korea that had been established. And but the there was still the problem of the occupation of Japan and in that particular area, all those islands and so forth, and so there was still a lot of stuff involving the military, and the draft was still compulsory at that time. So there I was in law school, having obtained my deferment, but realizing that I was going to eventually have to go into the service afterwards, happy that I could at least finish up with my law school before then. And while I was there in my sophomore year, I guess it was, that's when I met my wife, Natalie. Natalie had grown up in Squirrel Hill. Actually, she's already been interviewed by you people.
Yes.
I think there's a tape on her already in existence.
It is.
And she was in the graduate school of education, going for her master's degree. She had graduated from Penn State in child development and had obtained her bachelor's of science degree in that specialty. So she had when she left, she could have I guess taught school, but she wanted to get her master's degree. So she went. She was in the School of Education and got her master's degree in primary education. While she was there, she was involved. She had a fellowship. And at the same time, and she actually worked with Margaret McFarlane, who in turn got her involved with Dr. Spock, who was then as a psychiatrist was connected with the medical school, but also involved in developing a children's center at the school in Bloomfield, which all of a sudden escapes my mind. I know where it is too. In fact, we still it'll come back to me. It was where the old Marine barracks were down there in Bloomfield behind Canterbury Place. Why I'm forgetting it, I have no idea. But I don't know why I think it begins with an R, but I can. But in any event, that's where.
It was an armory of some kind.
Yeah, it was. Whatever that armory. What did they call it?
They had a name.
I don't know what it was called. I mean, it was the armory.
Yeah, but that particular physical location is where they developed the. The school was being planned there, which was to be a laboratory school, training school for kids. And Margaret McFarlane and Dr. Spock were working on that, and Natalie was their graduate assistant in working for that program. So as it turned out, it opened a year or so after. So it took them a long time to get this place together. And what happened was, upon her, upon when she came to, that's what she did. She got her ultimately got her degree in the same graduation that I got mine, her master's degree. But she was working in this fellowship, and she also was able to get a position at the same time as a nursery school teacher at the laboratory school that they had at Frick. And it was the only one in the city. It was a that had a preschool that was a public preschool. Everyone clamored to get in there, but it was like one of these magnet schools, and it was very limited as to the number of kids that they could take. And that it was located right at the, where the Frick School is today. In front of it, though, right on Fifth Avenue, was another school, which was a vocational school for girls, which has since been torn down. But that school was where the girls that were there would prepare the food that they would bring back to Frick to use to feed the kids and so forth, because it was literally a daycare center. So that was her where she was located. And of course, it was, while she was there, that in my junior year, the second year, is when we got married.
How did the two of you meet?
That's what I merely meant to tell you, because there is a Jewish aspect to this thing. I didn't know Natalie until one day. I was going to one of my courses at Pitt, and was in the elevator, and she was with another mutual friend who introduced her to me in the elevator. So the joke I always tell is we met in an elevator. We've been having our ups and downs ever since. That's when I literally first met her. There was a later occasion when.
This was at Pitt.
That was at Pitt. Yeah, mm-hmm. I belong to the Pi Lambda Phi fraternity, and so I used to take my meals there. I'd been at Pi Lambda at Penn, and it turns out I went. So I made the arrangements to eat my meals at the fraternity house, and they had a dance one Saturday evening. And in fact, one of my fellow law students, Dave Laffey, had a date with Natalie. And I remember just going into the dance. I didn't have a date at that time. She was there with him. And I remember turning to one of the freshman brothers in the house and telling him this, because he reminded me of it later. So this was Joe Ratner. That, see that girl there? We said girls then. He said, I'm going to marry her someday. And I don't know, there was just some chemistry, I guess, that was there. What happened thereafter was this. Natalie had been very active with Hillel up at Penn State. And she was the social chairman the year she graduated. And I think I remember telling you earlier that I had been the president of the Hillel Foundation at the University of Pennsylvania. So what happened, I don't know how many of you people knew Elsie Price. Elsie Price, she was very active in B'nai B'rith Women. And her family had the store Price's Dress Shop in Oakland. And Elsie was pretty much of a gadfly, and or as we will say in Yiddish, a koch level. She talked to me, knowing that I'd been involved with Hillel. I'm not exactly sure how she knew that, and said that could I help them out and go around to the different lodges in the area, like in Braddock and East Pittsburgh and in Pittsburgh itself and some of the other outlying areas that had B'nai B'rith lodges and talk about Hillel because that was part of the of their program. And I said, sure. She said, well, do you know anyone that could go with you? I mean, that would also be representative. And I recalled that Natalie had told me somewhere along the line that she had been involved with Hillel before. So the two of us sort of became speakers. And so we got to know each other a little better going out to the different lodges to talk about how important Hillel was on campus for Jewish students and so forth. And
So I guess that, to a certain extent... B'nai B'rith lodges.
Yeah, they were B'nai B'rith lodges, right. Most of those are non-existent now. In fact, the whole trend in B'nai B'rith now seems to be towards consolidation. I think you're going to find the same thing happening here in Pittsburgh as well. And of course, ultimately, we had a much... My dad had been very active with B'nai B'rith in Uniontown, where they had a lodge, and I guess they still have at least a Fayette County lodge. And I remember he reinstituted that after World War II. Naming it after a young man who died in the service, who was from Uniontown. He was Jewish, and interestingly enough, his much younger brother ultimately went to Penn when I was there also. So we had these two. Yeah, the name was Bree, B-R-E-E.
This was your father's grandson?
This is my father's friend Myers Bree from Uniontown. He was a merchant in Uniontown, and his son Arnold, I think it was Arnold. All of a sudden, I got a lapse on that one too. But he also had a younger son, Warren, and Warren was like a year or two behind me in school. And ultimately, he came to Penn while I was there, and he too became a PILAM, and we were good friends. In fact, when I decided I wanted to pin my wife, since that seemed to be the thing you did if you were into this fraternity thing.
You were in PILAM through law school also?
Well, yeah, no. I'm once a PILAM, always a PILAM, you know. Brother mine forever. In fact, that was our song.
But it wasn't meetings and so
forth. Oh, no, I didn't go to any of their meetings or anything. Although I might have sat in on one or two while I was there. But I came in and actually ended up living in the house my third year at Pitt Law School. And at that time, let's see. So I was going to say, when we wanted to get pinned before we actually got engaged, this was between my junior and senior year, and it seems that my pin evidently ended up. I never did take it off my shirt one time, and I think I'm probably pinned to someone from a laundry in Philadelphia. And so I had to find a fraternity pin. So I asked Warren Bree, the younger son, if I could borrow his fraternity pin for the purposes of pinning my. My wife, and it's interesting because just recently I hadn't seen Warren literally almost from the time of my graduation. I don't know if I saw him again shortly after that, I might have been once, but not since then. Really lost track of him, and just a month or so ago, a friend of ours said that they had met him at a party, and then in the course of discussion, when he said that he was originally from Uniontown, she said, oh, I know someone from Uniontown, and it was me, and it turned out. So we have to figure out a way that we're going to get back together.
Warren was your roommate.
Well, he was never my roommate, no.
He just was in the same fraternity.
Same fraternity, right. Right. And so we're going to figure out a way to get together again. Okay. So we got pinned, and ultimately that summer between my second and third year, we were required to take a course at Pitt. I think they were a law school, which is sort of unusual. But they were trying to figure out a way to keep their faculty more fully employed, so they were requiring that this course be taken, and which I did. So I was going back and forth to Pittsburgh, but we commuted. I commuted every day. I didn't live in Pittsburgh at that point, so I commuted from Uniontown.
This is between your second and third
year of law school for the summer.
So you commuted all summer?
Right.
For one course.
Right. And a seminar. There was a course and a seminar.
Now that we're,
and she was in Pittsburgh. So we were dating, obviously, during that time. So it wasn't that big an inconvenience. And it was in July, I think, that we got engaged.
July of 52.
Mm-hmm. And we were... I had an uncle, who was my mother's sister, Sarah Langer and Herman Langer. Herman was originally from Pittsburgh. And I think I mentioned this before, or maybe I didn't. But he was a Pittsburgher, and he met my aunt because he was in the jewelry business, and he was working at one of the retail stores in Washington, Pennsylvania, and that's where he met my aunt, Sally, and ultimately they got married. But and then Uncle Herman and Aunt Sally, for this same family, Washington, PA family, S.A. Meyer, who had they sort of had a chain of stores, and they had one up in Erie. So my uncle went up to manage that for them, and then eventually left and to start up a store of his own in Ashtabula, Ohio. So Nally and I went up to Ashtabula when it became time to think seriously about this ring we were going to get. Then Uncle Herman, because of his contacts, obviously in the jewelry business, took us into Cleveland to the wholesale district to pick out the stone. So, you know, this wasn't a complete surprise when it happened. We got our nice, very nice ring, and that's when I gave that to Natalie. It was, I guess, in July of that. But we had gone up there before, you know, making all of these plans. So that was.
And you were married.
And we got married, so we had to set our wedding date. Get engaged, you got to set a wedding date, right? We thought we'd get married in December because then we'd have the break from school. And that would be a good time to get married over the holiday. The difficulty is, the way the schedule was set then, right afterwards, the finals were going to begin. And I really didn't feel that I could, you know, just take off on a honeymoon when I was going to be getting, taking my final exams, midterms, in my senior year at that time. So we moved the wedding up to Thanksgiving.
November.
Oh, so you moved it up before December.
Yeah. So what we decided was ultimately that we would get engaged in December, although we had originally get married in November, even though we had originally said it was going to be December. So, you know, but people always say when you move your wedding up that you're have to get married sooner.
That was the way they said it.
Yeah, that was the way they said it. Well, then, of course, the old idea was that 9 months after you got married and nothing had happened, you'd sort of have a go-to-hell party for your friends, you know, who might have been starting the rumors to begin with. But anyhow, we did get married at Thanksgiving, the weekend before Thanksgiving. I think we talked about that before.
What was the exact date?
It was the 23rd of November.
1952.
Right.
And you got married the weekend before Thanksgiving?
Right,
so
Sunday. Sunday. Yeah. Right. So we left, we took a plane to Miami Beach.
Oh, yes. Well,
remember?
You touched on it.
My grandfather was there. Right, right. That was during our honeymoon, right.
Right.
And my college roommate, Harold Adler, who had the same name as my wife, which was sort of interesting, my wife's maiden name, no relation. But obviously we made a lot of that fact that I was used to rooming with an Adler. And by the way, back at the fraternity house, while I was there, her brother was the head of the fraternity. He was the Rex, as they called it, of the fraternity. So
it was
a Pilam, yeah, at the same time, Larry Adler, who's the physician. So we